Good evening and welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is Victoria Romanoff. Romanoff is an award-winning artist and the senior partner of V. Romanoff & Associates Restoration and Design Consultants. Her art has been represented in more than a half dozen one-person shows and over 20 group exhibitions. She is one of Ithaca's most celebrated restoration and design consultants, having a hand in the restoration of such local landmarks as Ithaca State Theater, Ithaca's Clock Museum, St. Catherine's Greek Orthodox Church, and the Clinton House Church, just to name a few. Welcome to the show, Victoria.
Thank you.
It's so wonderful to have you here with us. You have a fascinating biography. You were born in Latvia in 1939, and you and your mother fled your homeland around 1944, toward the end of the Second World War. Can you share with us any of your early memories of this extraordinary time in our history?
As the Soviets were approaching the Baltic states to basically take them over, those three countries only had a short moment of free air, about 18, 20 years or so. And as the Soviets were moving in, my mother and I and my brother, she was fictitiously married. We had quasi-German documents. We were called Volksdeutsche, which was just enough to get out. We took the last train out. The rest of my family perished in Soviet slave labor camps. So we were very lucky to be on that train. And that train, usually that train ride from there to Hamburg would have maybe taken a day or so. We were on that train for almost a week.
My God.
With the tracks being blown up in front of us and having to change. But we finally hobbled in to Hamburg, which was, of course, almost, portions of it totaled from bombing, being a major seaport.
Mm-hmm. So you came to the U.S. in 1954 when you were about 15, correct?
Right.
Was your interest in art and architecture developed in your really, really early days, or did it start when you came to the U.S.?
Well, I think something of seeing all these beautiful cities bombed and devastated had something to do with I looked at what remained and how beautiful it had been. And it somehow, I think, psychologically affected me. But I was also very lucky. We landed early on after some misexperiences in New York City, Syracuse, many other places. We landed in Providence. And when I was in high school, I was given a small scholarship to go to Rhode Island School of Design, and I fell in love with the school and the faculty, and I was lucky enough to get in, and it was a very serious art school, very much hands-on, life drawing every day for 6 hours. Mm. They said, we don't care what you do when you leave here. You can do abstractions, do what you want, but while you're here, you're going to learn how to draw. So I was lucky. I think I went to a very fine art school.
Mm. And what kind of mediums were you developing as a younger artist?
Initially I went into illustration, and I said, well, that's definitely not for me. I need to be, I'd like to do some wilder things than to have to. It's sort of fairly obedient being an illustrator. So after all, you have to do something for somebody else.
Mm.
So I did mostly oil paintings. Acrylics weren't that popular then. I love them today because, I can look at my paintings and say, well, this corner isn't working, and fix it up immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And it dries immediately. But then I worked in oils, and I didn't do sculptures until I came to Cornell.
Hmm. And what kind of subjects were you interested in?
Well, sometimes the war, sometimes abstract things, sometimes both. Never really painted still lives much. Kind of imaginary landscapes, I would say. For years I did that. And I always try to saturate my work with a little ad-libbed humor. I can't take things too seriously.
So you're renowned as a renovation and design person in this town. What made you get interested in that, and where did you learn those skills?
Well, again, I was as lucky with that as I was, I suppose, finding Rhode Island School of Design. I went back to Europe after I graduated from Cornell, came back here.
What part of Europe did you go back to?
All over. I was in Italy and France and Germany and Scotland, traveled quite a bit, and bummed around, and mostly lived in Rome for that year. Rome in those days, the movie stars were every place. Via Veneto, you could see everybody. But came back here, and Connie Saltonstall and I, my partner at that time, we found this beautiful barn in Newfield, the AD 1883, and it was in dire need of restoration. It was starting to really look bad. We were able to buy it for very little money, and we spent the next 10 years tinkering with it. And the barn taught me a lot, how things are fitted, what the different types of wood are, what resists high winds, how a beautiful cupola is put together, what a good door looks like and how it opens and closes, hardware, hinges. And then when urban renewal started here in Ithaca, we abandoned the barn for a while, came downtown, lived in the Clinton House, and got very, very active in historic preservation, which meant we're battling Boardman House simultaneously to trying to save, with Historic Ithaca, of course, the Clinton House. Mm. But Boardman House, Historic Ithaca, let us out on our own and said, we can't do two buildings at once, but see what you can do. So we had some posters that I made, and we got over 7,000 signatures in support of not tearing Boardman House down. Mm. Boardman House was like the line in the sand when people saw their beautiful city hall come down, their old hotel that was torn down, the Rothschilds department store. People said, enough already. Yeah. And Historic Ithaca was formed at that time, and we joined them early on. And these first battles were all winning battles. And it was the only tool used locally against urban renewal, which had far more ambitious plans than what you see torn down today. They were going to take the school down, too, wow, and the building we're in.
Well, that's just amazing. Is that a distinctly American thing to tear everything down? Because I've been to Europe and I lived in the Netherlands for a while. You don't see old buildings in this country like you do in Europe.
Well, you know, a strange thing that could have started is when the GIs came back and saw the devastation that was in part, you know, what we ourselves did there. Berlin maybe didn't really need to be saturated with bombs to the degree that it was, but they saw open spaces. Architects went to Berlin and said, finally, Lebensraum. Now we can build something modern. So that's that's a different example. No, I think that we forever think that maybe because our past is so recent, mm, that we don't put the same value on it as they do, let's say, in Rome or Florence. Of course, maybe our buildings aren't of that quality and maybe not those standards, but it's what we have. It's what we have to work with.
Exactly.
So in my opinion, you recycle. I'm a fanatic recycler.
I have heard that you are, actually. Now, I've often wondered about restoration. Did you approach trying to recreate the historical integrity of old buildings with... Is it hard with today's techniques and today's materials? How do you keep the integrity of the old?
That's a challenge indeed. Very often, as you see this building used, you know, this was all a beautiful open space.
And we're talking about
Clinton
Hall now.
We're on the fourth floor.
Clinton Hall, yeah.
This was a large opening for public meetings and theater performances. There was a mural of George Washington in back of your head on that back wall.
Really?
And there was a mural about a battle in Mexico on the other wall. I have photographs of that. I'll show that to you sometimes. But to get back to your question, this building had to be used in a very different way for it to be a competent building this day and age. So I think the emphasis often with a commercial building is, you know, modernize the interior so it can function in a way that it has to for contemporary needs.
And accommodate some of the contemporary.
But on the outside, mm-hmm, and thank God working with Joe Chosky was always such a pleasure, because if I went to Joe and I said, Joe, if we can put the nice old balcony back, the metal balcony that this building always had.
Now, how did you know that it was there? Did you have photographs?
Yes, we have to do a little detective work. Uh-huh. You find old engravings, of buildings that are as old as next door, for instance, Clinton House. There were early engravings. It was one of the hotels on a route of hotels between Albany and Buffalo, mm, and a day's ride in between. So there you have to look for that. You have to look for descriptions. In this case, there were some very nice old photographs that we were able to use. And the joy of working in Ithaca is the local talent. Duran Van Doren, who's an ace welder, fabricated the brackets. We got the balcony sections cast and then assembled them and so forth. But all the people that I have the privilege to work with here in Ithaca are really excellent at what they do, and that's kept me in Ithaca as long as I've been here.
Mm-hmm. And then so you do use new techniques and try to put as much integrity in making it look like it did in the early days, right?
Well, when you mix, for instance, if you're repointing a wall, like in this case the whole front of this building, all the brickwork was starting to crumble. Mm. You have to work with compatible masonry that isn't so hard that it cracks and the brick is softer than the masonry. So you have to analyze what the mortar is, get it back from the lab, or break it down yourself and analyze it. And you have to blend the old pretty much with the old. You can't, a lot of people make that mistake of repointing in a very hard new product, and that won't work.
Hmm. Interesting. Now, I'm really curious about this. You have ventured into set design for the Ithaca Opera Association. Now, how did you get into that? And how does somebody who wants to restore old buildings like the thought of this stuff being torn down almost immediately?
Well, I'm glad I only gave you my two resumes instead of my third one, which is I also ran a restaurant for 6 years.
Well, I'm going to talk to you about that.
Okay,
absolutely.
Later.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, I find working, once you have, I also was a painter, a billboard painter in a baseball park in Rhode Island for 6 summers. That was my most favorite job in the world.
No kidding.
And I was paid better doing that than anything I've done since. But the first lesson I learned there, which goes right to set design to some degree, they said, if you don't want to screw something up, start by working from the center out. Now, that's in other words, the sign you see, think, and there's no room for the K. So for years, I said, okay, go to the center and work your way out. That's a simplistic explanation. But once you work in a large scale, what it is doesn't really matter that much. It can be more two-dimensional, more three-dimensional. I think once you grasp sort of depths of things, mm-hmm. you can expand your repertory. And I've always loved the challenge of doing that.
Uh-huh. And you don't, as somebody who wants to restore the beauty of old buildings, don't get upset that these things are going to be torn down.
Not at all. Not at all. Huh. I mean, everything ultimately is temporary.
Uh-huh. That's a great philosophy. Now, I will bring it up right now. Another one of your passions is cooking. You opened an Italian restaurant for a time. Tell us about that.
That was an act of indescribable lunacy. Sarah and I opened the restaurant. We had it for 6 years. We were very successful at it. We had wood-fired pizzas. And for 6 years, I got away serving my own wild mushrooms that I collected with... I said, all right, have them send somebody from the health department. I'll have a mushroom quiz with them, you know, see if they're going to tell me that's not edible. But I never poisoned anybody. Our food was popular. It was unusual because we made the thin crust pizzas with fresh toppings. I made all the toppings myself. And we were what is Pangea today in Northside. So we could walk from where we lived over to the restaurant. A few mornings we skied. And I ended up, it wasn't my intention to end up the chef there, but that's the way things happen in the restaurant business.
So you must have been interested in cooking before you opened a restaurant,
I
right?
love to cook because I learned to cook sort of by having to make do during, after the war years in Germany. You know, I picked wild mushrooms, we picked nettles. My mother was pretty adept at foraging. Different roots, nuts, and berries. We were really, in some ways, animal-like. Mm. We'd go to the woods, come back with arms full of, well, of course, in the growing seasons, and then proceed from there to do something with it. She was a very poor cook, so when I was about 8, I fired her. And I took over.
And you knew the difference, huh, at 8?
Well, I don't know. I just had a knack for combining herbs and a little this and a little that, and it always ended up okay. I mean, I have my catastrophes occasionally, but not too many at the restaurant. And one last tiny note, if I may add to that, one of our last guests was Isabella Rossellini. We fed her dinner.
Nice. If you're just joining us, my guest is the renowned artist Victoria Romanoff. So you had Isabella Rossellini at this restaurant, and then you closed thereafter, right?
Well, I mean, where would I go from there? And I told my staff, I said, one thing we can give Isabella, we're not going to give her the best Italian food she's ever had, but one thing we can give her is privacy. So I said, don't you dare go bother her. Just bring her what she wants. So my most reliable waitress brought her the wrong dish, and I was staring at her in the back of the men's room through a stand of cactus. So
that sounds like something from a comedy.
We didn't follow our own rules at all.
So you never acknowledged that it was her, huh?
Well, not really. No, I really did want her to feel comfortable.
Mm-hmm. Now, as I was saying to you before we started, you have a discernible accent still. So I was wondering, you've been in this country for over 50 years. Do you think of yourself as an American artist or a European artist?
No, I'm afraid that in some ways my roots are still there. And I do travel a lot. even though I've been in Ithaca for a long time, I've lived outside the country many times, and when I travel, I tend to travel for a good long time. My latest love is Croatia. I just discovered Croatia thanks to a very nice man called Ivan that I met at a diner. And so the problem is you start picking up these other languages and dialects, and I think that's why I have sort of a little bit of a lingual hodgepodge in my head. And I do speak other languages. I speak Russian, German, a little bit of Italian, some Latvian. But every time I go to another country, I try to sort of drift into their culture and language. And I suppose at times the English starts to suffer if I put too much enthusiasm into it.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think you have accepted inside yourself as an American person? Well, what has America given you?
The love of this country, when I was an immigrant, I was very appreciative of being taken by this country because Europe was shaky. My mother was terrified of having yet another adventure with her Russians, or I should say the Soviets. The world was unstable. I think in some ways we were very lucky to be accepted here. We were also one of the last people to come here. It was very late for immigration, for Europeans.
1954, right?
Pretty late. Mm-hmm. I think that lately the government in America is such that I'm feeling more and more alienated. I'm terrified right now of being an American, terrified and ashamed in many ways. Mm-hmm. What's going on? To have these, literally these sewers backing up in Washington on a daily basis, and nothing seems to be enough to bring it to a stop.
Mm-hmm. Not to mention what's happening in New Orleans. And
yes, the neglect of our
war.
Own people here to that mm-hmm. degree, the incompetence, the bumbling and fumbling, and the evil and the stupidity combined. Mm-hmm. This is the saddest time I've ever lived in, mm-hmm. in America.
I think
it's really starting to affect
you.
Me.
Yeah, yeah. And how do you feel about the upsurge of nationalism that we've seen in the last 6 years? That must really frighten you, coming from a place where we saw what nationalism did in Germany.
Seen it before, certainly don't like it. It's very dangerous. It's a very simplistic concept. It leads to nothing. It has no depth. It's just a veneer of thuggishness, I would describe mm-hmm. it as. That's all it is. It's sort of like some of the decals, that wonderful car on the Jon Stewart show that was completely blizzarded in pro-war decals. It was quite a kind of, I don't have a TV, but I saw that, a picture of that.
Yeah.
So I made, you know, I put all my political opinions sort of in my fire station windows. And what did I wrote something about American patriotism is decal deep.
That's a very, very interesting way of putting it. Now, how much has the disturbance about where this country is going gone into your art recently?
Considerably. This is the first time in my life I've actually, because of the never-ending war that we're in now, the fifth year, I was so frustrated and enraged, called Washington a few too many times, locked myself in my studio, and I produced my own war series of all the memories I had of the sort of tragic times of what I saw happen, the destruction.
You're talking about during World War II.
Holocaust, which I was not involved, you know, I was not directly involved in that. But it's not too many nights I don't think about it, what we have done to each other, what human beings are capable of. So as far as an art outlet, it finally made me do this. I locked myself in my studio about 6 weeks and produced a huge amount of work, very large pieces, and they're all to do with what I saw kind of and felt at that time, which I had really never talked about, never really think about it, but I never visualized it in a graphic way.
Hmm. So, unfortunately, this has been a cathartic experience for you as an artist, right? I mean, what's happening in this country? Because so many people have become numbed out by it. And it's interesting that you've been able to find a creative outlet.
Well, I've been to all the marches. I've been in Washington 2 times, in New York once. I've marched in most of the ones here. It's good. I'm glad we're doing it. But obviously, I guess we're not doing enough. I have great respect for that small group of people here that are willing to go to prison for what's in their hearts and in their minds. You know, I think they've been wonderful and inspirational, I think, to all of us.
Mm-hmm.
So I've done what I thought was my obligation and duty to do under these circumstances. I've also written people, but, you know, I've never heard anything back from any politician.
Yeah. Well, sometimes you get little pop-backs of already, you know,
pop-back is
pre-written
just about
letters.
Right.
And,
yeah, some kind of little
thank you
cookie.
For your concerns.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, nothing personal.
Soundbite.
Yeah, that's
at
the
best.
Same thing most of us have gotten back, unfortunately. Which brings me to another subject. We need to touch on this because it, you know, it got a lot of attention. You were appointed to the Board of Public Works by Carolyn Peterson, our mayor, and you abruptly quit, resigned last August. Tell us about some of the reasons.
Well, I guess I wrote a letter of resignation mm-hmm. that was actually just going to be a quiet statement. Somehow the media got hold of it. I was called by the radio stations the minute I got home, and I said, all right, as long as this is going to happen, I might as well vent. And my big issues with the city of Ithaca is I like all the people in the different positions. It's nothing personal. It's the direction I failed to grasp. I've lived here for over 40 years. I think it's an extremely attractive setting for a handsome small city, and I don't see it going in that direction. I'm upset about the amount of parking garages we're building, what it's costing us. I think our tax rate is not one I can afford. I'm going to have to sell my fire station probably and move on. I can't afford to live in the city of Ithaca. Mm-hmm. I'm still working at the age that I am, which, you know, some people can afford to retire, but I cannot. So I have issues. I have deep issues with the direction of Ithaca.
Mm-hmm. And you, I also read that you were concerned about the aesthetics of some of the buildings that are going on. Particularly, you talk about the Hilton.
I don't like what these buildings look like. I think their scale is out of whack with Ithaca. I think the building materials themselves are not long-lasting. I hate waste. I'm looking at long-range in the sense that they'll probably have to come down. All the windows in the Hilton facing west already had to be replaced.
Really?
All the stonework, the cladding on the first floor of the Hilton had to be scored and repointed. And we don't have a legal sidewalk to either side of the Hilton. This is supposed to be a pedestrian-friendly city. So the new buildings that are brought in here have to keep that in mind. Somebody has to keep that in mind. No, so I'm at odds with the direction, which, you know, I think it's done in all fairness. These people think they're doing the right thing. I just don't agree with them.
Mm-hmm. And do you agree with the assertion that there isn't the money to build buildings and restore buildings in the way that you would like to see them done?
No.
Is that valid or not?
I think it's valid to a degree because, of course, we have to watch our budgets very carefully. Mm. But I think if you have design standards and guidelines that every city should provide to every developer that comes in here, we've had a few modern buildings. I love modern architecture if it's done well, if it fits well with its neighbors. Mm-hmm. Or sometimes the statement can be so provocative that it doesn't have to fit well with the neighbors. But that's not what we're building. We're building rather dreary, tired-looking, sort of schlocky buildings that look like something out of the 1950s. Been there, done that.
Yeah.
Time
they
to move on.
They do look mallish. The worst of some of the architecture for the malls in this country, I agree with you. Now, do you think you would have had more influence if you'd stayed on the board, however? How are you going to voice your thoughts and try to move the city in the direction that you want, having resigned from this board?
Well, you know, you feel if you get frustrated trying to, of course, the right way to try to change something is from the inside out. And, of course, people could say you had the opportunity and you blew it. I had an issue with one or two council people that had promised me for the entire length of time that I was on that board that they would not support the work that's being done on the Green Street parking garage. And when they voted for it, I said, it's time to go. Because as long as they're not speaking, we're not... If we can't even speak about these issues ahead of time and understand each other, and they voted to tear that midsection down because of some deal that was done with the developer, I said, it's time for me to go on. Mm-hmm. I'm not really in the camaraderie setting that I thought I was, where we would be open to one another. And that was my main reason, more than anything else, was the vote to tear that down and the people that voted for it. Mm-hmm. That was such a disappointment to me that I said, I'm going to have to step outside this, and as long as I'm in Ithaca, I'll probably remain a critic then.
Mm.
And again, it's not personalities. I like the people
that... Do you think you have a different idea about architecture than most people? Do you think of it as a living, breathing thing, whereas people just think of it as utilitarian?
I don't think of it as, no, I can't think of it as that. I've been to too many beautiful cities. You take Paris, and my uncle died in Paris.
Really?
Before World War II, and he had tuberculosis of the bones. But as he lay dying on a Parisian street bench, he said, I'm dying in the most beautiful city in the world. So what's the tragedy? I feel a kind of poetry about cities when they work well, when they function, or when sections in them do. It's a joy. It's a richness that we all have and share. You can be a poor person in a beautiful city, and you can say, I own a beautiful city. Mm. I used to say that about Ithaca. I used to love Ithaca.
Yeah, yeah, I have said that about cities I've visited. I'm absolutely in love with Amsterdam.
I've lived in Amsterdam.
Yes,
I have too.
I love Amsterdam too, and I love Paris and London. And there's something about European cities that you don't see here.
Well, they put the modern pieces in as they have to, but they know where to put them. They don't put them right smack dab in the middle. And if they do, that's my point, is then use some imagination. Then do it well.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, do it in a building material that works.
Yeah.
In a design that works.
So you've described some of the art that you've been working on in response to what's happening in this country. What else are you working on? Is there anything else, any other body of work that you're starting to pursue?
Well, right this minute, my associate Sarah Adams and I are working on 3 tired old historic Ithaca buildings. They're all wonderful, of course, but we're working on those. State Theater, we're bringing the Blade back, which is going to be with new neon that'll look exactly like the old neon. We found an article that described the colors, and it's very, very sexy red with green trim. And then the marquee will get restored. And again, we did color analysis. It's going to be really handsome. Clinton House will get painted. And right now we're working in a not very glamorous space, the little adorable little tea shop at 105.
State Street, right?
Yes, mm-hmm. The one that burned. Had a bad interior fire. And so those are 3 buildings, and then we're working in Cortland, in the courthouse, and we're working kind of all different places in New York State. But most of our, or quite a few of our jobs are here. But I do have a one-person show coming up.
I was going to bring that up. Tell people where they can see your work.
This show will be up at the Main Street Gallery in Groton, which is a very, very nice-looking, very beautifully kept small gallery. And the name of the show is At Different Times, and I feature some of my older pencil drawings that I have that I made quite a few years ago, new sculptures, and some of this war series that we just talked about.
And when does it open?
And the opening is Saturday, April 28th, 5 to 8.
Okay, great. Well, we look forward to seeing that. Victoria Romanoff, we have run out of time. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. We are supported in part by Finger Lakes Arts Grants and Services. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. We'll be back next week. I'm Tish Perlman.